So I would like to welcome you to another Changemakers podcast episode in our Leadership Beyond Gender series, where we explore the transformative journeys of influential individuals who are breaking barriers by driving positive change. In this series, I'm honored to have a great friend of mine, Leslie Grossman, as our guest. Now, she's a trailblazer in the field of women's leadership and an advocate for empowering individuals of all genders. Leslie has left an incredible mark on the leadership landscape with a career spanning several decades. You can't see that on her face, though. As the CEO and founder of Her Circle Leadership, Leslie has dedicated herself to uplifting women and helping them navigate their unique paths to leadership success. But her journey began long before the formation of her circle. Leslie led a team of talented public relations professionals in the 90s, successfully building her PR firm, working with esteemed clients such as American Express, Revlon, and IKEA. She honed her skills and developed her own set of tenets for effective leadership. However, Leslie's passion extended beyond personal success. She became actively involved in organizations dedicated to improving opportunities for women and promoting their abilities to succeed in a traditionally male-oriented industries. Over the years, Leslie's expertise and dedication led her to become a renowned leadership researcher and a sought-after coach for women seeking to redefine what it means to be a leader. Her impact has been felt through her one-on-one coaching and the national programs that she has created for women's leadership. In 2020, amidst the challenges posed by the pandemic, Leslie recognized the need to expand her platform. Her Circle Leadership was born, a web-inspired organization providing resources, education, and support to women as they develop their unique leadership styles. Leslie's vision is to cultivate a circle of women who can build a true parity in the business world, a community where collaboration, empowerment, and mentorship thrive. My intent with this conversation with Leslie is to explore her insights on cultivating a culture of empowerment and collaboration. I know that we will uncover some strategies that she has honed to foster inclusivity, create supportive workplace cultures, and empower individuals through memberships and sponsorships. I've learned so much from Leslie over the decades, and her wisdom, I know, will transcend gender boundaries, providing invaluable guidance for all leaders seeking to unlock their full potential and drive positive change in their organizations and communities. I welcome you, Leslie, to this very unique podcast episode. Thank you for being my guest.
Well, thank you so much, Runa, for being who you are, number one, and number two, inviting me to have this conversation with you. And I might just shout it back to you because you've been part of my evolution into the world that I do by the many conversations we've had over the past few decades. So it's all about collaboration. It's all about sharing and conversations and relationship building.
So true.
Thank that you. So I mean, I'm glad, what we've had together is what we need to share with other women and men as well.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I'm just gonna jump right to the first question, and I'm asking everybody this question: what is the first thing that comes to mind when you think of leadership beyond genders, Leslie?
Well, I think of three words. I think of collaboration, conversations, and contribution.
Contribution. Wow.
So those are the three words that come to me, because I think that those are the three words between men and women and all genders, because we now live in a gender diverse world. It's not just two genders anymore. If we practice those three things, we will create a better world for future generations. That's where I come from on that issue.
I like those three C's. I like that.
The three C's, yes.
The three C's, yeah. To leadership beyond genders. That is beautiful. Do you believe it is humanly possible to achieve that?
Well, I have to pause when you ask a question like that and think about it. I'm an optimist.
Yeah.
I would like to think it's possible. I think it's possible. And I also think it will take time.
Yeah.
And in a way, it will take, well, it'll take the three C's I just said. I think if those can happen, then I think it is possible.
Yeah. That's,
you know, it's certainly the world has been trying to do that more and more. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you even go back to what, after World War II, the United Nations was formed. And that was really to bring diversity together, the diversity of all the countries of the world together. So that was a huge step. What will be the next step? I don't know. Is it going to be what's going on now politically?
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
People, you know, countries are being brought together in a different way to protect each other.
Yeah.
But I am optimistic, and I deep in my heart, I pray that can happen.
I always think when I hear it is possible, I think of Audrey Hepburn's beautiful word, impossible doesn't exist. The word itself, I am possible. So when we as individuals see that we have something to that we can contribute, we are possible. It changes from being impossible to I am possible.
Yeah, and I think that it's the things that you talk about and the things I talk about and others talk about and bringing the genders together are also the same things that we need for humanity, you know, to be able to learn to listen to each other.
Yeah.
One of them, to be really hear each other and have the conversations that we need to have for the betterment. But it means giving up some qualities that have been identified as male, more patriarchal,
mm-hmm.
you know, qualities, that authoritarian type of thing, like you have to have a boss at the top, but that's not collaboration necessarily. And if somebody wants to be the boss of the world, it's a problem.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that dance that we are dancing. Now, I mean, you are such an icon in the women's leadership world. Can you share with us your story of becoming that icon, of overcoming what I am assuming here, that you needed to overcome some socially created conditions or a box, like I say it, that you needed to come to be in the position that you are in today? Can you share with us?
Absolutely. But first I have to say, I don't consider myself an icon. I am a contributor. I do consider myself a contributor. And I do consider myself vocal, and I speak out about these things. But I do have a story, and it's a long story, but I'll just give you a few highlights of that story.
Okay.
I mean, fortunately, I was fortunate, number one, to be the daughter of a male optimist, a father who believed in me and told me I could do anything I wanted to. And I actually believed him.
Plus.
That was the first step. The second step was when I had my very first job in the business world for a chemical company, but I was in the advertising department and I was an administrative assistant. That's basically a typist, you know, a secretary. And I went to lunch and had lunch with a young man who had come into the company at the same time as me. And he was in the management training program. And I said, well, I don't understand. We had the same degree from college. We both went to good universities. We had equal, perhaps I even had a better internship than him. And I was an admin and he was in the management training company. Hmm. And that was my first wake up call. Yeah. Something is not right here. We were in boxes, as you like to say.
Yeah.
He was in the boy box. I was in the girl box. And my future didn't look as possible as his. And that was the moment that lit the fire under me from that moment on. And the and then, of course, the women's movement happened and Gloria Steinem. And I said, yes, I'm right. Look, other women feel this way.
Yeah,
that was the beginning. And I went on a track to prove that wrong and find out, even at a young age, how that was different, why that shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And then the second one I will tell you, the second box was the mother box.
Yeah.
When I got married, and I married a man who respected me even as a very young woman. Fortunately, I married a man who would be supportive, which is, by the way, the first advice I give young women. Make sure you know what your partner is, if he or she is going to support you, that you're going to be able to collaborate together, because if not, it might not be the person you want to have that long-term partnership with.
Yeah.
But anyway, and that mother box, I went to say, I'm not going to be just a mother. I want to be a good mother, but I want a career where I can make a difference too.
Yeah.
And I figured out how to do that. So early on in my life, those were two boxes that I kind of fought my way out of and said, no, I'm going to speak up. I'm going to find someone that's going to help me with childcare. I'm going to all these things. So that was the beginning.
Yeah.
You know,
really following, knowing what makes your belly go on fire, like you said, and following that calling and finding ways to make it.
Yeah.
To overcome it. Yeah, I like that. Now, you are such a champion for cultivating a culture of empowerment and collaboration. What key strategies have you found effective in creating an inclusive and supportive environment that manages somehow to treat people uniquely, to transcends these gender boundaries that we see so often?
Well, I mean, these are things that I will tell you I learned early on. I didn't at the time know how to identify them. But I learned them early on, the things I'm going to share with you in my career. And then by being involved in organizations and meeting lots of people and doing certain things, well, and then they were reinforced when I did research, when I was fortunate enough to be a research on women that had reached the C-suite,
mm-hmm.
and found out why they reached the C-suite. Were they like men? Were they not like men? What was it about them that put them up there? But early on, I learned that having a vision, which I didn't call it then, I called it a goal,
mm-hmm.
having goal for my career was critical. If I didn't set my sights on what I wanted to be as I every 10 years, let's say, I wouldn't get there.
Yeah.
And I learned that early, and it's still true today. It's so true today. And when I did research, those women that made the C-suite always had their eye on being a leader and making a difference at high levels where they could implement positive change. And to this day, that's one of the things I share with women when I teach my classes at GW. And women often are limit themselves, don't think about how they could make a difference in a way that fulfills them.
Yeah.
And when they do, they just fly. Now, that's something that for some reason, women, most women, not all women, but an awful lot of women don't do that. That doesn't come naturally. Whereas with men, it appears that a large portion of men are always thinking, what can I do bigger? How can I, whether it's make more money or get a higher position or run for a higher office, they're always thinking about that. But women tend to come from, how can I make a difference? And sometimes they think it's smaller than bigger. And in fact, it can be bigger.
Exactly. I think the question should be, how big is the reason for this, for that we, at least our assumption is that men do this naturally. I mean, I recognize today that that is my assumption. I know today that being a man doesn't naturally mean that you're very good at creating your vision and you know what you want. On the contrary, I worked with that many men and they are just as confused as many of women. Well, but our assumption, how we assume that because you are a man, then that is, you must be driven. You must have the answer.
Right, right.
And then at the same time, the assumption that if you're a woman, you need to be taught. Because the assumption there is you are so kind and occupied with your beauty and or whatever the stereotype is, that you don't pay attention to it. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes when you look at it from that angle and you just look at how we've been conditioned.
That's what it is.
Society is conditioning us to be to believe that we have to behave this way.
That's right. Runa, that's exactly where it comes from.
Yeah.
That's exactly where it starts. It's not in our brains.
No.
It is society that from the time we are children, boys are permitted and encouraged to be bolder mm-hmm. and louder, and women are encouraged to be quieter and more polite and just work hard and get good grades, right? And then be mothers. And the boys are eventually, as they get older, they're encouraged, well, you're the breadwinner. Right.
Yeah.
What a
burden to put on a person.
It is. And really, that is the hardest thing. And you see it even today.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things being written about the uncomfortability that a lot of men have with their partners, their female partners making more money than they're making. And that all comes from that early conditioning where maybe that's the way it was in their family. And other families around them. And so they unconsciously took that in. Oh, that's my job to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, in order to survive in this world, this is what I have to do. I mean, that's what we do.
And that's where we have to change as we're coming into this new world and looking for equality.
Yeah.
We have to help we have to start children when they're younger and begin to change that kind of thinking. And as they get older, reinforce it until we're here and the ages that we are, where we can say, it's okay. You don't have to behave like this. You don't have to behave like that. You can live the life you want to live.
Yeah. And what I've seen and what I heard in my interviews with leading experts in leadership field, in neuroscience, in quantum physics, in all of these different fields, I've come to realize that one of our conditions our conditioning is that we tend to see that the answer or the solution is going to be the next generation. The next generation is going to do something differently. When we already know that there are ways, regardless of our age, our gender, our background, our you name the box,
right,
we can change our programming. We can change.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So I find that to be so empowering to see. Even, I mean, when I look at my dad, he's 92 years old, and he would, I mean, he would, I would have put him into the male chauvinist pig box for decades. And now today, when I'm talking to him, and I'm joking with him to see his reaction, he looks at me and says, well, of course woman can do that. So I see that his perspective has changed. Although he would have told you a few decades ago, he would have told you, well, the best role for a woman is, you know, he would almost have said barefoot, pregnant in front of the stove. You know, he would almost have said that. But what I mean by this is I see people that want to see the world differently. I see them doing this work.
Yes, of course they are. And that's why they do. And we have to, yes, that the work that I do is all based on that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It is. It's looking at, it's supporting women and hopefully men as well to look at the barriers, the self-limiting beliefs that we have perhaps been instilled as younger and say, I can change this. Yeah. And that's what we do. And that's why I base the work that I do with executives at GW and my Her Circle Leadership Program is based on 7 tenets. Yeah. And one of the tenets is mindset.
Yep.
And that's critical here.
Yeah.
How do we change our mindset? How do we take on a growth mindset? How do we take on, you know, a change mindset, the different mindsets, and begin to look at, well, what is it in my brain that's holding me back? Mm-hmm. And how do I shut that down and open up to the possibilities?
Yeah, that monkey mind that is constantly in there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say myself, when my husband and I, probably about 5 years into our marriage, we both did leadership programs that were focused on that equality and bringing men and women. It wasn't called that, but that's what it was.
Yeah.
It was communication. It was relationship building. It was being courageous.
That is so interesting when you're saying that, because I know that you've really been focusing on women leadership programs, and yes, I do. I am all for seeing more equity in the work, but basically just equity or whatever it is, whether you're just being the leader in your own life or you want to step into a leadership role business-wise or in your career. In your experience creating and facilitating the big national programs that you've done, what would be different in a leadership program for men if you were asked to develop a program for male leaders?
Well, and I'm not waiting, by the way, for somebody to ask me to do that. I've already, before the pandemic, just 2019, I did a program which I developed called Conversations Between Men and Women, Courageous Conversations Between Men and Women. And that was the start of me going. And it was like, it's like step by step, right? First, I needed to address women.
Yeah.
And then we need to bring the men along.
Yeah, exactly.
That was kind of in my head, the process. But I will tell you what I would teach to answer your question.
Yeah.
There are things that I would teach men, because these are things that, yes, some men do these things well, but the majority do not, from the research that I've read.
Exactly. Yeah.
I would teach them how to listen, to truly listen. And by the way, many women need to learn that too. That's not exclusively
Nope. That's
that's
just being a human.
It's a human thing, but as women are changing, men need to be able to be listening in those difficult conversations that might be hard for them to hear.
Yeah.
Because men tend to be fixers. We are too, women are too. But, and they don't really, and this is brain science, have the patience all the time to listen to the story and all of that. So listening would be a different kind of listening. Women can listen longer.
Yeah.
Unless they've been trained. So listening would be number one, so that they give people a chance to fully express themselves.
Yeah.
And then hold back their reaction and not judge. Mm. Just take it in. And that's then ask another question. So become a coach, so to speak, because we know coaches ask open-ended questions.
Yeah.
And to truly try to understand what the other sex is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And ask her questions, because she may not fully even answer right away what's going on below. So listening would be my number one. And coming with that is not interrupting. And you hear about that in meetings all the time, right? That's one of the biggest complaints women have, that they're interrupted by the men at the meeting. And some of that, I will give the responsibility to women, because sometimes they do go on a little bit too long and maybe don't make their main point, which is something that we do in the training. We teach women to make their main point first and then support it. But so stop interruption and to really have more, learn how to apologize. Women are over-apologizers. Men tend not to apologize. And that I sometimes see in my husband, by the way. So they just kind of go on. You know, it's like no time for this. It's like just keep. And it's really, and to bring out more of the empathy, which men are starting to learn more already since the pandemic. Really be more empathetic. Really listen to what's going on and find out what's going on at the heart, not just in the head.
Yeah.
So those are, those are some of the things that I would address.
Exactly. You talk about, this is so interesting. And I know that you have so much to share. We talk a lot about collaboration, and I agree with you. It's vital for any leader to thrive, really, to be able to collaborate. However, what I also see that collaboration is often put into the stereotype of that is a woman's thing to collaborate, regardless of if you are a collaborator or not, you know, authentically. Mm-hmm. What are some of the potential pitfalls or limitations that you see when we start to assume that women are inherently more collaborative than men? And how can we move beyond these assumptions and ensure that collaboration is valued and practiced by individuals of all genders?
I think that here's where I believe we should start. And that is by building relationships between men and women in one-on-one.
Yeah.
And learning to listen to each other. And really pausing to think before we react, allowing each other to think about it. I think we have to start with two people, and then three people, and then four people. You know, there is a lot of research, and a lot of times I think if we bring research to the fore and we show men and women the research, it opens up their mind. For instance, there's research that shows when scientists... Used to be it was so competitive for scientists to develop drugs and things like that because they all wanted to get the money and the credit and all of that. But when they started doing some research on the scientists that collaborated, they were able to find cures for things faster than and with less spending less money. Then when they compared it, when one scientist with just a team of people, but not collaborators, tried to do it by themselves. So there's research that shows that. And I think we have to show people, look at this. Let's see the research, what it showed. Now let's try this. And let's start it in one-to-one conversations by listening to each other and really trying to solve problems together.
It sounds, if I'm summarizing what you said, what I'm hearing, and I've been hearing this throughout so many of the interviews that I've done, is this calling. It's like we've been called to stop, pay attention to our reactions and responses that are only part of our programming, part of our conditions, part of what we've always done before, part of what we've always seen people do in surrounding us. It's all these habits and rituals that are linked to genders and the gender roles that have many of them. It seems like there are many of them originates in the 1950s when I think about it, but it's like we've been called to stop. What response do I need to take now that will take this forward, not just doing the same thing that I've done again and again and again and again and giving me the same results that hasn't really moved the needle?
Yes, and you use the word stop. The word that I use is very much like, but I use pause.
Pause, yeah. And it's more gentle.
Well, and also it means that you're not shut down.
No.
You're just pausing to think and then go on. And I use that word myself. It was like a breakthrough word for me as a leader and as a wife and mother too. I had it written everywhere in my office, pause.
Yes.
Because I was not pausing. I was like jumping in. And I was like, no, pause. Think, listen to what the person's saying, and then respond.
Yeah.
And I really, to me, that is like one of the most powerful words.
Yeah.
In our vocabulary. I don't know how you say that in Icelandic, but
the word doesn't come up in my mind right now, which is irrelevant, but I think what you're absolutely right, that is about this pausing. And I think when you're saying, again, going to summarize, knowing what lights my fire, knowing my vision, having vision for who I want to be, who I want to become as a leader, and then pausing when I feel that I want to react on something, respond on something, that I pause and say, okay, I feel I want to do X, Y, Z. Is that going to get me to the person that I want to be? Or is it just going to hold me back in entranced in the box that I unconsciously been put into because I'm this gender or I'm this race or I'm this religion or I'm born in this society or whatever that be, which I call all of these habits and rituals, I call them being that you are, that we are being, we're being used by and stopped by people that are no longer even on this earth.
Yes. Yes.
It's a, like a peer pressure from dead people.
Never thought of it that way.
Because it's all made up.
It's right. It's all made up. It's all made up. And we can make new things up
Exactly.
that work better
That
and
work
more.
better. Yeah, I know. So coming to the to I can go forever with you, Leslie. But just one more last question. And if you would sum up, what do you see would be different if we could implement leadership beyond genders in our world?
I believe that problems would be solved that haven't been solved. I think that we bringing the two genders together because we think differently, and that is documented. We would really look at different alternatives, and it would require that collaboration, but to and that pausing to think, does this person, what they're saying, does this have value? And saying yes, really truly listening to each other, we could solve the world's greatest problems. We could say, I mean, climate change right now, I mean, we're seeing it all over the world, and I don't see anybody moving any faster. It's so in our face now. If we're not bringing groups of men and women, scientists and laymen, teachers together, that problem will not be solved. So bringing women and men together, thinkers in their fields, and really listening to each other will solve climate change as well as the many other problems that we have to make this a better world. I truly believe that. So it may not answer your first question about will humanity change totally? But it will be so much better.
It would be so much better. Leslie, I'd like to thank you once more for being a guest and sharing your insights on this journey of looking at how can we lead beyond our genders and become better, bolder, and brighter as the leading light in our lives and in our industry. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.